The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, my next guest left Dublin to go to New York, spent a decade there. But the good news is she's back home in Dublin. And after a couple of years been back, she's now embarking on a new play at the Abbey Stage, which is going to be there in September. Lisa Tierney Kehoe, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
We'll give the mention of the play straight away. The name of it is?
This Beautiful Village.
And it's going to be on stage in the Abbey in September.
Yeah, and there's a free preview on the 31st of, sorry, on the first Monday in September.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so you can come along and you can queue up and get a free ticket to come, and then it runs then until the 14th of September.
The free preview is a great idea.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Graham McLaren and Neil Murray brought it in when they started up, and it's brilliant. The last free preview, I was actually in the Abbey Bar doing notes with Louise Stevens, the dramaturg there, and we looked down as the hours went by and people were starting to queue from about 4 o'clock, and at the top of the queue was these three young, I want to say kids, but they weren't. They were probably like 18, 19. And they were sitting at the top on the ground playing chess, waiting for the free tickets.
Well, that's different than being on the phone.
Oh, it was brilliant. It was really, really nice to be editing a play and looking down and seeing people queuing to get into
that's
the theatre.
And it's a great idea, I suppose, to try and welcome people into the theatre. Maybe people who wouldn't necessarily think, I don't want to spend X amount on a ticket, so I'll try and get a free ticket if I can.
Absolutely. Theatre can be quite expensive, and sometimes it doesn't feel as welcoming. And I feel like this is a really good way for your National Theatre to say, hello, come in, come see a play for free.
So it's on September, and so are you in the middle of a very busy time now at the moment? Rehearsals are in full steam, are they?
Yeah, we're in week two of rehearsals. They're going amazing. Actually, I was in for the first 2 days intensely, answering questions and figuring it out, and it's a lot of work. And then I have been out of the rehearsal room, but editing, kind of with a new play, you want to make sure that you're putting your best foot forward, and you know, the kind of playwright I am, I want to be constantly making sure that it's as good as it can be. And it's also, it's a 90-minute straight-through play, and it's very funny and it's very sharp. So it has to be as sharp as possible.
What's it about and where is it set?
It's set in Dublin in the present day. And it's about six neighbours who come together after a piece of graffiti goes up at the entrance to their estate. But this is a piece of sexist graffiti. It's misogynist. And this is what happens when they all come together and all the varying different opinions on this kind of thing happen. And so hilarity and drama ensue. And it's an exploration of power and men and women. And it's very funny. That's my, from the moment I wanted to write this, I knew the only way I could do it was to do it through humour. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Something that's very, it's very newsworthy, very noteworthy, of course, at the moment. We're talking about misogyny and gender imbalance and all the rest of it. So interesting that you bring humour into it to try and maybe lighten what has been, I suppose, sometimes a very serious conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I, as an activist, I've had some very, very serious, some would call boring conversations over the past few years about gender imbalance and inequality. And I really feel, as a dramatist, like writing for theatre, that if you're going to bring people into a room and you want them to leave thinking about something, you got to make them laugh, you got to entertain them. And that is what I plan to do.
When did you write the play? Because you're back in Dublin, is it?
A year.
A year.
It's a year, actually, just this Monday, gone. Yeah.
Well, a happy anniversary.
Thank you very
back
much.
In Dublin.
My move-iversary.
Yeah. When did you write it then? Did you write it when you came back?
I wrote it, I started talking to the Abbey when I was still in New York about it, but I actually wrote it just before I moved here. So the start of last summer, I wrote the first draft, and I wrote the draft, packed my apartment up and got and moved home. Like it happened in the space of 6 weeks. And then I kept working on it and kept working on it. And then they announced in November that they were going to produce it. And I've just been working really, really hard on it ever since. Very closely with Louise Stevens, who is the dramaturg there, who is amazing.
What was it like? Because you were in New York for, was it 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years.
What was it like there? And were you writing there? Were you doing the same thing in New York for all that time?
Yeah, I mean, I left to go to New York when I was 30, 31, and it's a different time in your life. So it's exciting, it's full of opportunity. I didn't have a kid. I went from knowing everybody in the industry and the business here to knowing absolutely nobody there. So I arrived and I basically had to start knocking on doors. Now, I got some introductions to places, but mostly I had to build it up from scratch. The thing that's great about New York and the thing that's great about kind of America is that you can meet anybody. Like, I met some amazing people. I met Meryl Streep, I met Gloria Steinem, I met Tom Hanks. I got to meet these amazing, amazing people who are at the top of their game. It's also incredibly difficult to navigate. I did the whole flying out to LA, taking meetings with studios and doing all that kind of, I spent about a year doing that, taking notes, which is a whole nother story for another day. But yeah, I made my, one of my plays was premiered in New York. I think it was in 2014 or 2015. And then that went to Mexico. It was translated and done in Spanish there. So a lot of interesting thing happens. A lot of interesting things happened. It's a hard city to be in.
I was going to ask you, what's, because you mentioned they're the big names, and we often, you know, hear about these big names who are, you know, huge in Hollywood and they've made, you know, millions globally in blockbuster movies, and yet they'll come back and they'll do a play, you know, in New York. You'll hear them, you know, that they've been doing something, and you think that's, it's an interesting change, isn't it, for some of those people maybe to come back. But you often then you'll read the interviews and they'll say, oh, well, you know, being in a play, that's really my true love, you know, it's my passion. Is it quite a small kind of, you know, even though New York is such a big city and it's such a big, is it a small little industry there, do you think? You know,
yes, when it comes absolutely. To I plays? Mean, once you get into it, you start to see, oh, this is just like Dublin, except a little bit bigger. It's still a village. Everybody knows each other. You know, the thing that exists there is opportunity. It's different in how it's structured, in that it's all privately funded and it's as hard to get your work on there as it is here. It's just that there's no accountability there, so theatres can program whatever they want. They can, you know,
if it's privately funded, then as well,
they don't have to answer to anybody. Yeah. They can be like, okay, we're going to program an all male season, and that's, you know, you can't really do anything about it. I mean, it's not going to be popular, but that's what they, you know, that's how it works. It's just different.
Did you were 10 years in New York? Do you miss New York? You're back a year now, so yeah. I mean, is it? What is it? Do you have a longing to go back to New York?
No,
or nothing.
No, absolutely not. I, you know, people keep saying to me, "Oh, you must miss it. You must, you know, I'd love to live to New York." I'm like, yeah, it's great in your 20s, and it's great maybe in your early 30s, but then it becomes a really hard city, and then you have a kid, and I got sick when I was there, and it just grinds you down. New York will beat you up. It is not a city for, you know, it's not a soft city. And the only thing I miss, I mean, I have friends there that I miss. The only thing I miss is like watching street basketball. But other than that, I don't miss a thing about
street basketball.
Yeah. I played basketball for years and I used to love, I actually coached basketball in my daughter's school and in a little league there. And I really loved that. That's one thing, because it's, you know, the way kids play football on the street here, they play basketball on the streets there. That's the only thing I miss.
That's the only thing. You mentioned there, of course, that you had a child in New York. And how old is your child now?
She's six now.
She's six. So, you know, did you
might be listening.
Did you? Good morning.
Good morning, Molly.
Good morning, Molly. So did you come back partly because of her as well? Because was it to do with schools or anything? You know, you said
100%.
That New York is difficult.
Yeah. So the reality of schools in New York is that everybody said to me, oh, it's really stressful. And I thought, oh, sure, how bad can it be? Because I came from the Irish system, which is, you know, I mean, it may be a little stressful, but it's nothing compared to this. We were in the New York public school system. So my daughter had to start when she was age three, which I thought was too young. And then they're doing active shooter drills from age three, and you get a letter home and they tell you what they did, and they bring the kids into the bathroom and they hide. And when I got that letter home, it really, I mean, I was quite vocal in pieces I wrote for the Irish Times about my opposition to the gun laws in America and the increasing gun violence. And when that becomes something that your daughter could be directly affected by, it changes everything. And so it's not just about, oh, we don't have support here and my family are 3,000 miles away. It becomes about, this is not what I want from my life. It's not what I want for my daughter's life. And actually, since we've left, there has been shootings in a playground nearby, and her school's been put on lockdown.
Gosh, so she would have had to
She wouldn't put through a shooter drill for real.
For real. Yeah. That's pretty, I can see that you're affected by that just thinking back to it, and it was a couple of years ago. I mean, Did you have a conversation? Did you sit down with Molly at three then and talk to her and tell her? No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. No. The only place that it got real is actually we were in Orlando Airport earlier this year, and there was a false alert for an active shooter. And we walked into Orlando Airport and there was 200 people running at us. And my daughter said, "Why are all those people running at us?" And we got outside. And my first thought was, it's a bomb or it's a shooter. Mm. And I just was thinking, how do I get out of here? How do I escape? And when you go to America and you're living like that, you just think, this is out of control. And that, you know, if you look at last weekend, there was a shooting at a food festival, you know, and that's just one of them. I can't remember. There was another one and I can't remember it. Like it becomes about something bigger than, you know, oh, I just want to be close to my family.
And of course, you don't have that at all in Dublin. There's no issues like that, really. You know,
no.
I mean, and she's now going to school here. And is she happy here?
Yeah, she's delighted. She's gone from, it's amazing. She's gone from this giant building in Brooklyn, which even was the smallest school I could find for her, which, you know, was like had police at the door. Now they were unarmed, but it was still, you know, school police. To a tiny little prefab. She's in an Educate Together startup, and of course what the government do is they put, you know, kids in a prefab, and but we're trying to get a permanent school. But she's there, and it's such a different system. It's so much more calm and quiet, and the Irish education system is amazing. It really is.
And I suppose it's not until you leave that you realise maybe that things are better at home.
Absolutely. You know, and there's a lot of grass is greener. Like since I've been home, you know, I'm not one of these people that came home and thought, oh, Ireland is perfect, because it's not. You know, there's been a lot of difficult moments in the time since I've come home. But having lived in New York and having been in America, you know, not first under Obama and then under Trump, you know, it's a whole different ballgame. It's a much, much harder, harsher society.
Do New Yorkers find it difficult? Because we know that New Yorkers in general, even though he's from there, they don't really like him, do they?
No. I mean, I guess he got some votes. I mean, he's, you know, but generally New York tends to be quite liberal. One thing New Yorkers don't like is a huckster. He's been referred to as a con man even before he ran for president. He's regarded in circles as kind of like, who is this guy? Like, I mean, he's a chancellor.
You mentioned Obama as well, of course, and we touched on it briefly, but you got sick when you were in New York.
Yeah.
You had cancer.
Yeah.
And are you okay now?
Yeah, everything's grand.
Everything's grand. But obviously the healthcare system in America is quite tricky.
And there Do was we have one, a couple of hours, Maggie?
Yeah. Well, there was just the interesting, that one of the articles that you wrote was about your $700 nosebleed.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's crazy. So you were sick and you were having treatment.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
So I think the $700 nosebleed was, I'm going to try and make this as simple as possible, but every single thing you do in the American healthcare system is billed. So if you go into a hospital, you know, or if you go into an emergency room, in my situation, you'll get billed for being in the emergency room. You'll get billed for the doctor that saw you, the cotton wool bud they stuck up your nose or anything like that. And so what happened, what happened to me was actually really bad, and it happens to a lot of people. I was erroneously disenrolled from my insurance company. Somebody made a clerical error and I came off a system. And it happened the week I had a surgery and happened to have a very serious post-op hemorrhage. And I showed up in the emergency room and they said, you don't have health insurance. And I'm sitting there bleeding out of my head.
That must be just so frightening, because you're already in a horrendous situation. You're feeling so bad and you're at your most sensitive and somebody's talking to you about insurance.
Well, actually, it gets worse. Like, I didn't go to the hospital. I stayed home and bled at home for a long time, for hours, because I was so afraid to go to the emergency room. And eventually, and my husband was in a blind panic. Mm. And, you know, we're lucky. We have the means that we could we could pay for it. We could figure it out. And we have, you know, we're smart. We can figure it out. But it was terrifying. And it was like midnight. My daughter was asleep. We would have to wake up neighbours. And I was just gushing blood out of my head. And I'd gone past, they say you should wait 15 minutes and then you go to the hospital. And it had been like 2 or 3 hours. And I'd been trying to stop the bleed. And eventually, I was like, well, we have to go to the hospital. We're going to have to, whatever happens, we're just going to have to figure it out, because you're just so scared. And this is what happens in America. You know, I think by law they have to treat you, but, you know.
But they'll also talk about your insurance.
But they'll also bill you. I mean, you know, and when I showed, and the thing is, like, you show up in an emergency room and it was like Dante's vision of hell, and you're paying for it. Mm. I mean, it's, you like, if you can go to any of the A&Es in Ireland and they will be better than that, and you're actually paying for it. Now, there are some obviously there are some emergency rooms like on the Upper East Side and parts of Manhattan that are super swiss. Like there's some hospitals that have stopped taking insurance because there's so many wealthy people in New York. And so they are, you see the divide between rich and poor, middle and rich is changing things. Mm-hmm.
So $700 you had to pay for that.
Oh, I'm still fighting it. Oh, I'm not paying for that. That wasn't my mistake. Oh, I love a good fight, Maggie.
Good for you. Well, listen, Lisa, it's great that you're back, that we've got you back to Ireland.
I'm delighted to be back.
And best of luck with the writing. What's next? What's after The Beautiful Village? Obviously, you're in the middle of doing that now, but then it's September time. So
I'm developing a TV show. Fantastic. Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
That's great news.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. And also another
Do we know
play.
Anything? Do we know anything about the TV show?
It's about undocumented immigrants. It's about migrants and immigrants in the UK. So, you know,
In the UK.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's going to be quite topical.
Excellent. Lisa Tierney Kehoe, Associate Playwright at the Abbey Theatre. Lovely to speak to you. Thanks so much. And The Beautiful Village starts, and it'll be the first day of Monday.
First Monday of September, I believe that's the second.
Is the free preview, and then it'll be tickets from there on in. So best of luck with it. Lovely to have you in the studio. We'll take a quick break.